care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this second day of November 2010. And we've got a great program today. We'll be speaking with, first up, with Rob Trahan. Rob is a spokesperson for Movember. And our next special guest is Sue Price in Brisbane from the Men's Rights Agency. And we're crossing to Hyderabad in India, where we're speaking with Uma Chawla. So, on this bright, sunny Sydney day, this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now, and in the studio with me is Phil York from Dads in Distress.
G'day, everyone.
Now, there have been some interesting takes on feminism recently. There's an article here by Durkanai Ayubi talking about feminism curbing third world women. And this is something that's not often thought about, but the argument from Durkanai is that the feminists are seeking to bring light to the sufferings of women who migrate from third world countries with stories of abuse. But the problem is they look at it from the Western feminist ethos, and they regard these people coming from third world countries as being uncivilized. They talk about us and them, and they distinguish between the stereotype of the Western woman as against the cultural imperatives of people from the third world. So the argument is that this is further marginalising these third world women, and instead of talking about us and them, we've got to move to a situation where it is just us, and that if women can get over this, or the feminists rather, can get over this this distinction between third world women and the Western feminists, it's going to be much better for women in the world over. And also there was an article from Miranda Devine in the, it was from the Daily Telegraph, October 28, and her article was, "Why Are All Men Made to Feel Like Fiends?" She gave the example of where a child had walked onto Military Road, a busy road in Sydney, and was about to walk onto to Military Road when a man saw the child walking in that direction. Now, this sort of scenario is played out every day, and the problem is that the man in that situation feels obliged to suppress his natural healthy instinct to protect the most vulnerable members of society, and instead starts worrying about whether some action might be taken against him in an extreme case, a mild form of pedophilia, just by picking the child up and saving the child's life. Miranda goes on to say that demonising men will not prevent child abuse. It's in the interests of children that, as she says, we women must force ourselves to reclaim the notion of male innocence. The male protective instinct, after all, is one of the most crucial safeguards of childhood. And it is one of those situations where I think we've just gone too far.
Yep.
In
world's gone crazy, mate.
Branding men, all men, as potential pedophiles. You know, we've got to get back to that protective role of men. Men are very happy to assume that role, and it's going to be much better for the children and for the women and for everyone.
And of course, as we've reported on this show before, one of the safest places for any child to be is with a man.
Yep,
you know, more abuse is actually held out to children through women. So
yes, and it's interesting. President Obama, who's got lots of problems at the moment trying to get through the elections, but he's recently unveiled a pre-election domestic violence initiative, saying that the Obama plan will promote wider use of restraining orders. Now, this has been criticised by a number of groups in America, and it points out that domestic violence programs should be based on solid evidence and research and not consist of a series of disjointed efforts cobbled together on election eve. They note that, just in connection with what you were saying then, Phil, that an increase in female-initiated abuse has been documented in government surveys, and according to a 2007 Centers for Disease Control study, women commit 7 out of 10 acts of one-way partner violence. Now, I hadn't heard the figure being as high as that, but that's the situation in America with this with domestic violence, and one would hope that President Obama perhaps will not proceed with his with that new violence domestic violence initiative that he's been that he's recently proposed, hoping, I guess, to shore up his the women's vote in America. So now, Phil, you've been doing some CSA evenings recently, some information evenings. I wonder if you could just tell us a little bit about those.
Yep, sure, Bill. We've already run a couple within Sydney, but this Thursday night we have another one, and it's actually been run locally here in good old downtown Liverpool. So if anyone's interested, we will be running the Child Support Information Night here at 306 Macquarie Street, Liverpool. Just upstairs from these particular studios, actually. Available on the night will be senior case officers who will be giving a general overview of the agency and the formula, etc. And although it is a general information night, if you're having issues with the agency and you know, you feel like you're not being heard, this is a good opportunity for you to come along and actually be heard. And history has shown when we've run these particular nights, if there is an issue in your own private case, the CSA will take your case number back with them. They will get a senior case officer to have a look at your case and the complaints you may have, and they'll get back to you with an outcome way, one way or another. So they have been really, really valuable nights to lots of people all over Sydney so far. And as I said, this Thursday night at 7 o'clock, we have our version here in Liverpool.
So what's the address, Phil, where they should come?
The address is 306 Macquarie Street, Liverpool. And if you'd like any more information, my mobile number is 0401 426 101. So feel free to give me a call, or you can just turn up on the night. This is a secure building, but if you ring the buzzer, we'll come down and we'll let you in, and away we go.
Well, that sounds great. We hear a lot of complaints about the Child Support Agency, so this is an opportunity for people who do have some problems to actually get something done. So let's hope that people that need that service will turn up on
Absolutely. You know, there's lots of just even simple things, you know, like who can understand the letters that they send us, you know? So, you know, part of this night is just the general information. And as I said, if there's anything more complex, the guys will take it away and deal with it away from this particular evening.
Now, I think there have been 9 of these nights, and so, look, it's a great opportunity, and let's make... I mean, this is the 9th and last, I understand.
It is. Up until next year when we'll do it all again.
Yep, so it's a last chance, a great opportunity to sort out any of your problems with child support. Now, just one other article I note here. There is a lot spoken about violence and... the difference between violence and abuse, and sometimes that difference is obscured. We're now starting to hear control being used very often in connection with violence, and it's the control is now extending to things, concepts such as economic abuse and relational abuse. Now, this is when it starts getting a bit silly. If you're talking about economic abuse, it could even extend to include a man's attempting to get his wife to not buy an expensive car when he's just been laid off work. I mean, there are some situations where some economic control is actually called for. I mean, even things that might sound obvious, like one partner trying to limit the other person's access to friends, that would be inappropriate in many cases, but would be appropriate if, for instance, the friends were heroin addicts. So we don't want to fall into this trap of regarding any form of control as being some form of abuse, and then from abuse becoming some form of violence, and before you know it, someone is up before a court having to explain why there was not violence and why there should not be something put in place against that person, such as an apprehended violence order or the like. So I think, as I say, there needs to be some sort of analysis of control, what control means. Don't just automatically jump into assuming that control equals abuse equals violence, because that's probably one of the explanations why there's been such a rapid increase in the number of, well, there's been some increase anyway in the reporting of domestic violence. Now, just a roundup for International Men's Day. I remind you then that's on the 19th of November, the International Men's Day around the world. And in Australia, I'm pleased to see that Ipswich City Council is having another IMD breakfast at the Ipswich Civic Centre. And the Australian Department of Defence has announced it will organise IMD as one of its special calendar events. Around the world, there are lots of things happening. In New York, there's going to be an Academy Awards for Great Men, which will be a black tie gala event at the Black Spectrum Theatre. Three events are planned for California, at Westlake and at Santa Monica and in Los Angeles. In Canada, there are government proclamations being issued for all citizens in Vancouver and Ottawa. And the proclamation reads, "Now therefore let it be known that the Council of the City hereby proclaims November 19, 2010 as International Men's Day in the city of Oshawa, Vancouver. And further take notice, let it be known that the Council of the City hereby urges all citizens to take cognizance of the event and fittingly join in its observance. Vancouver holds a large IMD event at the Roundhouse Community Centre with numerous speakers, entertainment and various interest groups attending." There are also events going on in France, Italy, Spain, the Caribbean nation of Grenada, and Ghana. And on International Men's Day, just giving you a notice of this, we hope to be speaking to someone from Ghana about what's going on in Africa on International Men's Day. So it's all building up to a great big celebration. And our first speaker, Rob Trahan, our first interview with Rob Trahan is in connection with the Movember part of IMD. And we'll be speaking to him after this break.
Rumor had it that I had drunk more than I could hold. I maintained I had every sense completely. It really wasn't the alcohol that colored my point of view. I was just intoxicated with you. I didn't know what time it was when I finally got back home. I just remember waking up and washing up alone, and that fuzzy feeling in my head, it wasn't from a drink or two. I was just hungover truly. I believed I had every sense completely in control. Upon my word and without a lie, I swear till I'm black and blue. I was just intoxicated. I was so intoxicated. I was sense completely in control.
Grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress. 1-300-853-437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this second day of November 2010. And our first guest this morning is Rob Trahan. Rob is a spokesperson for Movember, and he's had an adventurous life. I believe he's walked the Kokoda track, sailed Sydney to Hobart, and now take on the really dangerous stuff of Movember. Rob, are you there?
I'm here. How are you going, Bill?
Well, thank you. Now, Rob, the Movember, the sprouting of moustaches. Now, I don't know whether I can hold you responsible for all these ugly growths, third eyebrows sprouting around the place, but it's been going on for about 7 years, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not the one that you can hold accountable, but I'm certainly one of the converted, that's for sure. It's a great initiative that started back in 2003, and it was an idea that was conceived between two mates just at the pub on a Sunday afternoon. They were talking about fads and fashions that have come and gone, and the moustache, you know, literally disappeared off the faces of men back in the early 80s, so they thought, let's bring it back and then bring a men's health spin to it.
Yes, well, it certainly had its, I suppose, its grandest hours with the Australian cricket team when Dennis Lilly and his mates, Rod Marsh, Greg Chappell, all sprouted these moustaches, didn't they?
That's right, and we're fortunate enough to have the likes of Dennis Lilly and Max Walker as our mentors for the Movember campaign this year, so it's great that they can give us a few pointers on how to hold a moustache.
Yeah, that's, they were very stylish, of course, and well, look, I can tell you, I've started mine. Poor Phil York here has to look at it for an hour and a half, but
it's looking good, Bill.
We've just started. And how are you going, Rob? Are you doing it again this year?
Absolutely, yeah. We had the had a shave down first thing yesterday morning, so it's only the second day in, so there's not much growth at the moment, but let's hope in 30 days it's looking pretty full and furry.
Yeah. And now people that do grow these moustaches, I think I can refer to myself as a Mobro, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Once you've registered on our website at movember.com, you officially become a Mobro. And it's kind of like joining Fight Club, you know, when you're in it, you know.
Well, it's been enormously successful over the 7 years, and you've also found a way to involve the women in it, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the success of it has really come down to the passion that Australian men have in terms of not only kind of raising awareness for the two causes, for prostate cancer and depression, but also to have a lot of fun with it. We encourage people to get involved and just to have a lot of fun. And it's really a type of conversation that we can have in talking about men's health for potentially the first time ever. And you know, the motivation of it really came from what the women were doing and how successful they were in raising awareness. So we've kind of taken a leaf out of their book, and it's certainly really captured the imagination of Australians.
So, and they're called the Mo Sisters, is that right?
Mo Sisters, that's right. And the great thing with Mo Sisters is that they're such an integral part of the campaign, because not only do they encourage the men that participate, but they also help to recruit other Mobros and organise events. And, you know, a little bit of a wink and a smile goes a long way when you're struggling through your first itchy week.
Yes, well, look, I think it's, I have to agree with you. I think it's great, because the women are definitely good planners and networkers, and if we can get them on board, it's going to be an enormous boost. And I'm just looking here, in last year, you managed to raise more than $21 million.
Yeah, that's right. We had 128,000 Mobros participate across the country. And, you know, when you look at the AFL Grand Final at the MCG and see 100,000 people, you realise how big it is. And I think that we had another 28,000 on top of that all sporting a beautiful little bit of luxury on their upper lip. It's quite astounding.
Yeah, look, it's absolutely extraordinary. And do you have any idea of what the numbers are going to be in 2010?
We haven't. Not sure on an indication for this year, but at the moment we're tracking above where we were last year. So we've had six consecutive records in terms of both registrations and dollars raised. So we'd love to see that trend continue for another year.
Yeah, 150,000's got a nice ring to it, hasn't it?
Sure does.
And now it's also spread to other places around the world, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. This year we're actually operating in 10 countries. So last year we had globally more than 250,000 people participate, and it's really taken off in especially US, Canada, and in the UK. The UK numbers are looking like they might even give the Australians a bit of a run for their money, which is kind of timely with the Ashes coming up at the end of the month. So we want to encourage the Aussies to really get behind it if we can beat the Poms in another thing.
Yeah, and even countries you probably don't automatically think of as joining a campaign like this, but I believe you've got Finland, you've got Ireland, Canada, New Zealand, USA. It's any new countries coming in this year?
Yeah, that's right. This year, we've got the Netherlands and South Africa and Finland are our three newbies this year. And it'll be quite great to see the some Nordic blonde moustaches up in Scandinavia supporting men's health. So, I mean, it's a simple idea, but it's a whole lot of fun, and it really does put a good fun aspect on some serious causes.
And we're speaking with Rob Trahan in connection with Movember and the International Men's Day 2010. Rob, could you perhaps tell us a little bit about where the money does go?
Yeah, well, in Australia, we raise money for both the prostate cancer and for depression in men. These are two very important causes. For prostate cancer, we have 20,000 men we diagnose with prostate cancer in Australia alone every year. And tragically from that, 3,300 will die. And this is actually more than the amount of women that die from breast cancer every year. So the awareness piece is such an important part. And similarly with depression, that it's a silent illness. And one in eight men in Australia will suffer from depression at some stage. So it really makes the awareness piece such an important part of what we do. Because if we can get blokes to start talking about it and learn that there is actually help out there, we can kind of be a prevention instead of the cure.
Yes, I mean, they're two very, very clear examples of men's health where it's we're not doing all that we could, and prostate is a killer, and depression is perhaps an indirect killer with the number of suicides. And we often speak on this program about the at least five men a day are committing suicide, which is a dreadful loss for the country. So working with Beyond Blue is I think is very much called for, and a great way to spend that money that you're raising.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, the great work that Beyond Blue are doing, that Movember's able to support programs such as their 24-hour hotline, which is staffed by professionals. And, you know, Movember funds can actually go directly into supporting that. And, you know, what we want to try and get the message out to men is that, like, depression, it's not a weakness at all. It's, every man succumbs to the man flu every now and then. And it's a very similar thing, you know. It's just something that it can be treated, and there's a huge amount of help out there. So we want to encourage blokes to seek help if they need it.
Yes, and there are a number of triggers for that men's depression when you think of the family court and the child support agency and all the other pressures that are put on men these days. It's certainly called for. And I wonder if you could tell us too about the Movember Foundation. I think that's the third channel where the money goes to, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. This year it's an initiative that has been a result of the Movember campaign going global, is that there's such amazing world-class research happening around the world, and what we've got is such experts in all these different countries. So the Movember Foundation funding is set up so that they can channel the funding into where the best research is, and it allows the research in different countries to share knowledge so that there's no duplication. And, you know, with the right minds working together, we can get towards a cure a lot quicker than doing it individually.
So I presume there's some sort of charter for the foundation, is there, on how the money is spent?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a the November board has sat down with the committee and agreed on the best way to appropriate the funds. So it's a great initiative.
Yes. Now, I think there's been some research recently by Deakin University on behalf of Movember as well. I wonder if you could tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, we do a bit of research every year on the on a sample of participants that join up, and we ask them a whole range of questions through how they enjoyed the campaign, what we can improve on, and we specifically want to understand about what they're, if they're talking about men's health, and are their, behaviours changing. And what we found last year is actually that 54% of men are actually talking about men's health issues with their friends and family. But not only that, since 2007, we've actually got three times the amount of those people who are actually seeking medical advice. So we're seeing a trend that's coming from firstly talking about it to actually actioning, which is a great trend to see.
Yes, and I guess that's had an influence on the fact that we now have a men's health policy from the federal government, don't we? For the, one of the few countries in the world that has one.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, Movember, there's still a long way to go in terms of blokes in Australia losing that she'll be right attitude. So it's great to see the federal government has actually got a men's health charter. And, you know, Movember still wants to keep pushing this message. And we've got a long way to go, but it's certainly heading in the right direction.
Yes, and how closely are you linked to International Men's Day?
Movember's not actually linked with that specifically. I think our beneficiary partners are involved in that.
Mm-hmm. So it's really just the Movember sort of works well with the Mo, and it just so happens that International Men's Day is on the 19th of November.
That's right. It's a great fit.
Certainly fits well. And we're starting to see the benefits of this, that men are becoming more conscious of their health, because I think there are a number of issues involved as to why men tend to die off before women, aren't there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think, what is it, we're about 5 years younger than the women are for the average age. But, I mean, I suppose in Australia, we've really got this she'll be right attitude towards our health. We kind of talk about it that most men will get their car serviced every year, but they won't go and see a doctor unless their leg's falling off. We really want to encourage blokes to you know, go and get an annual health check and stay healthy and also have fun.
Yeah. Because, I think there are some fun runs being organised in connection with International Men's Day, so that would go along with what you're promoting as well. And I guess the other factors are that men are perhaps risk takers as against women. I guess there are a whole lot of things that go towards that lower life expectancy, but it's really something we can't afford.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we talk about men's health. It's not only the men that are affected, obviously, from things that are like men's health issues. You know, the families and wife and children are certainly a direct, I suppose, result of men's health issues. So it really is important for blokes to be on the front foot with their health and, you know, talk about it and look out for your mates.
Yeah. Now, in particular, with the prostate cancer, are you encouraging the men to have the PSA test or an annual test for that?
Yeah, absolutely. Men over 50 to have the test, and if you've got a history in the family, it's after 40. So we really encourage blokes to get that annual PSA test, and there's also the DRE test as well, which that men don't kind of like to talk about, but it's a simple, quick thing that can quite literally save your life.
And look, I'm very impressed with the we talked briefly a few minutes ago about the celebrities that you've got involved. You've got Max Walker, Dennis Lilly, Magda Zabanksy was a supporter of men of prostate. But how have you been able to get all these high profile people involved?
Well, Movember's been very fortunate that we've got these amazing people that go to such great lengths to support our campaign. For example, we had Kurt Fernley, who crawled the Kokoda track in November last year, and
made you feel like you'd had it easy, I suppose, did he?
Oh, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to spend quite a bit of time with him over the last couple of years, and every time I meet the guy, I'm just constantly amazed and inspired by what he's been able to do and in the face of adversity. And he contacted us off his own bat and said, hey, I want to crawl Kokoda and I want to raise you some money. And he raised over $40,000.
Wow.
Last year alone. And, you know, it's such a humbling experience when you can, when you've got people like this that just, you know, go off their own and just absolutely blow your mind with what they're doing.
So that's great. So he actually approached you, and you know, I guess once this thing gets rolling, it is rolling already. But the more it rolls, you know, you'll get a, sort of that automatic feedback, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're blessed to have so many different supporters across all walks of life, and in Australia especially. And you know, we've got musicians and sports stars and actors. It all really just adds up in helping us get the message out there. I mean, the great thing about Movember is that we see every man is equal, no matter who you are, where you're from, and that, you know, we really encourage that, you know, the local hero to get involved in, and that's certainly what's been happening over the last few years and helping us get that message out there.
Yep. And at the end of the Movember, is there anything planned for any celebrations at the end of the month?
Yeah, every capital city around the country, we have gala parties. And they're held in the last weekend of the month. And it's really a thank you to all the participants that have you know, donated their face for the month and also raised a whole lot of money for us. So we have the 7 events in the last weekend of the month. And what we do is it's a huge fancy dress party, and we crown the Man of Movember for 2010.
Well, that's something to look forward to. Now, Rob... For people who want to get more information, I wonder if you could give us the best website for people to go to.
Yeah, it's really simple. You head to movember.com, and it's not too late to register to be a part of it. It's a it's free to enter, free to join. Once you register online, you'll get yourself a MoSpace page, and through that you can email that out to your friends and family and drive registrations and also drive that sponsorship dollars.
That's great. And I guess you're on YouTube, Facebook, all the usual things?
Yeah, that's right. We live in a digital age now, and when you have a look at our website, you'll see that it's all hooked up with Facebook and Twitter, and got some great clips on our YouTube channel, Movember TV on YouTube. So it's the word certainly get out there, and it's great to see that so many people are spreading the word through their social networks as well.
Look, that's great stuff. It's great news, Rob. And look, we from Dad's on the Air, we wish you all the best with Movember and for this year and for future years. And we thank you especially for coming on the show today.
My pleasure, Bill. Thanks very much for your support.
Thanks, Rob.
Days when I was young enough to know the truth.
They grow so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air. Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this second day of November 2010. And our next special guest is Sue Price in Brisbane from the Men's Rights Agency. And Sue was on our 10-year anniversary show. She's a regular guest, well-known to listeners on Dads on the Air. And Sue also received a special award in 2009 for her work and support of Australian men's and fathers, and that was presented to her on International Men's Day 2009. Sue, are you there?
I am. Yes, good morning, Bill. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, and yes, congratulations going back to 2009.
thank you. That was that was very much appreciated, very much unexpected, and I accepted it, on behalf of everybody who helps us in what we try to do.
Yes, which is a lot. And anything particularly planned for the 2010 IMD?
Well, I'm involved again with the Ipswich City Council International Men's Day. This is the second year they've supported it fully, and they've been the first on board, which is really wonderful of them. And we have another under the sails breakfast at the Ipswich Civic Centre. If anyone wants to come along, they'd be more than welcome.
Great.
I believe there's been quite a large increase in countries and organisations participating this year. Apparently it was only about a dozen countries in 2009, but it's up to 41 now. So it really is beginning to take on an international flavour. And hopefully with that expansion of interest, and also with the Movember campaign as well, which is also being adopted internationally, we're starting to see November building up to being very much a men-focused month. You know, everything about men will be discussed.
Yeah, that's great. Yes, we've been speaking with Rob Trahan, a spokesman for Movember, and it's certainly in its seventh year is really sprouting wings. If that's sprouting something.
Yeah, growing moustache as well. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I think the International Men's Day ties in beautifully, of course, with it. A lot of people still say, "Oh, why do we need an International Men's Day?" It's like every cause that for generations, like children's issues, women's issues, equality issues, how do you focus attention on them if you don't create special events? And I think men's days, women's days, children's days, they're all special events, and they're all created so that just on one day a year, and hopefully it'll extend to other days, there is a special focus on the issues that are concerning men and fathers, men and all their roles that they play in our lives. So that's important that they should be given that opportunity. There's no reason why, if we have a Women's International Women's Day, we shouldn't be able to have an International Men's Day. And, of course, if we have those days, we need to have an International Men's Day to try to counter all the negativity that we've been subjected to over the last 30, 40 years. Mm. And that's where the real problem lies. In focusing on International Men's Day, we're trying to say to people, men aren't evil, they do lots of wonderful things, they're an essential part of our lives. We couldn't live without them, at least I couldn't, I know that, I put up my hand for that. So there are lots of wonderful things to say about men that we need to recognise.
Yes, and the good thing about IMD, and you mentioned Movember, is that there's a direct benefit in the money going into such worthy causes as the Beyond Blue and the prostate cancer. So you can actually see the immediate effect of raising funds on those days.
Yeah, the men's men's issues, health issues, have certainly been neglected, and they're now getting much more support and much more response, which is good. But my focus is really concerned with a negative portrayal of men, and this is what I want to try and overcome. When you see, you know, the automatic idea that if violence is ever discussed, it's always men. If there's an attack against a child, it's always a man. It's all these sort of assumptions that are made that are quite incorrect. And we need to get over that, and we need to start to trust men again, and we need to start to respect them.
Yes, and I notice in Switzerland there's recently been a gathering for at a secret location for the first international anti-feminism meeting.
Yes, and they had to hold it in secret, Bill, because the women's groups attacked the venue where they were going to hold it. So, but their idea is, you know, they're saying they have five key beliefs of what they call themselves anti-feminists, opposing feminist hatred of men, valuing the nuclear family, believing in the child's right to both its parents after divorce or separation, looking at the individual and not judging people by their gender, and accepting that men and women are different and counting that as an asset.
Yes, well, it's hard to see any arguments against those principles, isn't it? I mean,
well, I think most reasonable people would believe that and would accept that as being a very valid reasons for holding such a meeting if that's, you know, it's declared to be necessary.
Yes, I think that their belief is, and there's a lot to support this, that feminists have really hijacked this the movement for women that was aiming towards equality, and they've taken it somewhere else.
I've always claimed, I suppose, for many years that it's no longer about equality, it's more about female supremacy. And that, of course, is as bad as male supremacy, if you want to put it in those terms.
Mm.
We have to look at respecting both genders, and we have to treat both genders as equally important and equally essential to our lives and the continuation of our world.
Yes, it seems to me it might be a bit like a pendulum, and we you know, there's no disputing that in times gone by the men did assert dominance over women in a lot of areas. Mind you, there are certain advantages that come out of that with people knowing exactly what their roles are and things, but still, to get the most out of the community, it's great that women have improved their situation in the Western world, but I think now it's gone too far. And I can only hope that eventually we'll get the pendulum back where, you know, as you say, there's some equality.
Well, it needs to be true equality that we're talking about. We shouldn't be advantaging or disadvantaging one gender over the other, which is what we tend to do now, particularly when it comes to law and legal issues. Men are very much disadvantaged, particularly in family law, particularly in regards to sentencing. You know, there are lots of issues, social services, health issues. There are lots of corrections that are needed to be made, and hopefully International Men's Day will help to focus on that and focus on, more importantly, on the positives that men do. There was an important point that was made to me that males respond much more energetically to positive male roles than they do to negative stereotyping. Mm. And the attempt to shame men and boys via negative stereotyping simply makes them turn their backs and ignore the message.
Mm.
And that's very true. So we need to talk positively about men. We need to recognise all the wonderful things that they do.
Yeah, so perhaps if we were to say something similar in Australia, we mightn't call it anti-feminist. We might call it, well, pro-equality or something.
Pro-equality, pro-men and women. It's pro-equality, certainly.
Mm,
but true equality, not this false idea that we're being fed at the moment, which, you know, is very damaging and very dangerous. It's causing a significant shift in attitudes, government attitude towards gender roles, and giving a great advantage to women, unfortunately.
Yes. Well, I guess we can see why this particular movement started in Switzerland, because they've always objected to totalitarian ideologies and the historical Swiss love of freedom. So it's good that it's starting somewhere, and I wonder if it's if it'll get the reaction around the world, and perhaps we'll even see something come in Australia.
Is it? Well, you might. I'm afraid here people tend to pussyfoot around the issue far too much, and they tend to still couch it in terms of, we're improving men, rather than saying that men are okay, let's get on with it. Instead, we always seem to take the approach that there is something wrong with men, and men need to address those things that are wrong with them rather than saying, what are we expecting from men? Are we expecting too much in these things? Are we criticizing them for issues whereby, you know, women may be at the fore of committing the same offences? It's just gone too far one way.
Yes. Now, I know you've got views about the, in talking about violence, when it strays into the area of analysis of, you know, there's a controlling influence and then there's another, I think that's split up into about three different categories, but I think, you know, your view, and I'd have to agree, is that violence is violence.
Well, violence is wrong. Let's make that quite clear, Bill, in the first place. You know, violence against men, women or children is absolutely wrong and shouldn't be condoned at all. But you're not going to cure the problem of domestic violence, say violence in the family, by only treating half of the symptom and half the problem. And you do. And what's happening, of course, with the opinions now is that, oh, it's only men who commit violence against women. Women are only ever victims. By doing that, you're committing two sins. You're, number one, ignoring the fact that there are one in three victims of violence are men, and that there is a need for perpetrator programs for women as well as for men. So, you know, those two things sort of follow on from that.
Yes, and there seems to be a bit of playing around with the definitions. You know, people start talking about they obscure the difference between violence and abuse, and we're talking about economic abuse, relational abuse, so that if a husband objects to the wife going out buying a new car, that might be regarded as economic abuse.
Yeah, well, absolutely. It's been expanded to such a level that we now are getting a legal response to internal problems that probably would be better tackled by counselling rather than making them a legal process. We've had it here in Queensland for a number of years whereby they take into account other abuses such as financial, even someone sort of reading the newspaper and ignoring the other partner might be considered as abuse, or throwing the cat out the door, I do remember one case where a poor man sort of objected to his wife, who was Fijian, and she was ringing home daily, and she racked up a bill of about $500, and this is going back a number of years, and he just said, I can't take that anymore, and she took out a DV order on him for him trying to control her use of the telephone.
Yeah.
And that's how nonsensical it becomes when you use the law to try and get a response to some actions like that. It makes a mockery of the whole system.
Yes, it's legal is not the right area. I mean, I suppose if you looked at it and analysed the situation, that sort of situation, it's really the people for whom control is the issue are actually the controllers themselves. And you can, that Fijian woman wants to control the phone, doesn't she?
Oh, she was in control of everything, and she knew that if she didn't get her own way, she could just put her hand up and say, I'm a victim of domestic violence. And that's, unfortunately, is what happens. So the control really lies with the person who claims to be the victim.
Mm. And Sue, are you up on what's happening with domestic violence around Australia? Because I know some states were moving to even more draconian laws.
There have been draconian laws put into place in New South Wales, I think, is heading that way, Tasmania, Western Australia. Where they're giving the police the power to virtually issue an interim order themselves and remove a person from the home just like that without having it signed off by a magistrate or a JP or anyone else. No other interference. It can just be the sergeant of police who signs the order.
Mm.
So that you've got people out of their houses. You've got people locked up and jailed without charge, virtually, until they can be brought before a court.
Yes, and then that leads into the next problem. There are no men's shelters anywhere, are there? So,
well, no, they're absolutely right. Well, we've come across very few. The only people that I know who run homeless places for men, which aren't men's shelters, such as are suitable for men who've come out of a viable home situation. Salvation Army and those types of people, and those shelters are always full. They give you lists of other shelters that are supposed to be emergency accommodation for family men, but that you can never get a man into those. Absolutely not. We've tried.
Mm. Yeah.
So it's one of those areas where it's just not recognised that men and children can be victims of women's violence.
Yes, and you're at the front line. Well, it's perhaps another area where there are so many areas that could be highlighted on International Men's Day, but that's probably another one that
I think so. It's like I watched a program. I saw the end of it of one of the quiz shows the other day before the news came on, and it was really quite extraordinary what happened. There was a young school teacher, male, who was answering some questions, and every time he answered a question, oh, I've probably got it wrong, I know I'm going to get it wrong, I never get anything right. And it was Eddie Maguire got up, and he kept saying to him, come on, man, be positive, be confident in your responses, you know, you're going to get these right. And he did get several questions right, and then finally on the last one, he again came out with the fact, oh, he'd never get it right, no, he'd never be any good at these things. And Eddie Maguire got up out of his seat, went over to the man, and sort of play-boxed his ears in an attempt and said, come on, you know, stand up for yourself, be proud of yourself. And to see that reaction from a TV presenter on national television was quite extraordinary. But that man was a teacher of our children, school children, primary school children. I just have to ask, what image and what presentation is he giving to his pupils, particularly the male pupils, that he's going around saying he never gets anything right? Those young people are going to copy that.
Yes, well, there's such a shortage of male teachers, the male primary or infant teachers, isn't there? And
there is a shortage, but you look a bit further, and this is what I'm saying about the denigration that's happened about men. Why is that man believing that he is absolutely no good at anything, is so useless? Because he's been told so many times. He reads the newspapers, he watches TV, he watches the promotional activity, he watches the information about men are abusers. That is why he believes he's no good and he's never going to be good at anything at all in his life. And that's what we've done. We've created men like that, men who have no confidence in themselves as men, who need to be restored, I suppose, to the normal state of mind whereby they have confidence in themselves, confidence in what they do, and particularly in his circumstances, confidence in teaching the values of men to young students.
Yes. It perhaps brings us back to the broad objectives of International Men's Day, and they're set out.
That's exactly right, and that's exactly why we're involved in International Men's Day, because for too long we've put up with the denigration of men over the years. Men in the media are regarded either as complete fools or idiots or absolute, you know, the Dr. Jekyll characters. And you know, we can't put up with that any longer. We have to say, hey, come on, this isn't true, the portrayal that you're putting out about men. That's why that we have the need to focus on the good things that men do.
Yes.
Let's look at the positive sides.
Yes. Celebrate the positive and
yeah, that's right.
And have a bit of fun as well.
But it's not right to denigrate all men or label all men for the bad acts of a few.
Yes, well, look, on that note, Sue, we might have to... I think we've run out of time again, but look, it's always great to talk to you, and we wish you, if we're not talking to you before the 19th, we wish you a happy International Men's Day, and wish you all the best in all that continuing work
you're
doing.
Thank you very much. I hope everyone joins in and gets on board and starts to think about the good things that men do instead of focusing on the negatives.
That's great. All right, Sue, thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
rather be a sparrow than a snail. Yes, I would. If I could, I surely would. I'd rather be a hammer than a nail. Yes, I would. If I only could, I surely would. Street. Yes, I would. If I could, I surely would. I'd rather feel the earth beneath my feet. Yes, I would. If I only could, I surely would.
In Distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, this second day of November 2010, and we're now crossing to Hyderabad in India, where we're speaking with Uma Chawla. Uma is an anthropologist and a biologist by training, and she is the president and founder of a number of associations over there, including the All India Forgotten Women's Association, the All India Men's Welfare Association, and the Andhra Pradesh Mothers-in-Law Protection Association. Uma, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, that's great. I know it's very early for you over there. I think it must be a bit after 6 a.m., is that right?
It is 6
a.m. Now, Uma, we're leading into International Men's Day, and I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about your involvement with International Men's Day.
I have been involved with celebration of International Men's Day since the year 2007. In fact, that was the first year that India celebrated International Men's Day. And we realized that there were a few other countries, not too many, but a few countries around the world were celebrating the occasion. And looking at the situation of men in India, we thought that it was about time we started making people realize that men are human too, and that just being male is also a reason to be celebrated. Especially during times when men are being sidelined as either unwanted or discriminated against, you know, in the name of empowering women. So that's how it started. And in the year 2008, I was contacted by Warwick Marsh from Australia. And we shared a lot of thoughts, you know, we had a lot of thoughts in common. And we said that from then on, we were going to celebrate it together. So And this is our fourth year celebrating International Men's Day, and we are hoping that it will be a much bigger celebration. Last year, I think, was one of the biggest celebrations throughout the world, because we did a lot of coordination with individuals across the world, and we're hoping that this year it will be much bigger.
Well, let's hope so. I was surprised to see there are so many problems for men in India, because we have a different image perhaps in the West of men in India. But I noticed that that no money's been allocated for men's welfare in the budget for many years. There are no constitutional bodies formed to redress problems peculiar to men, and there are, so it seems that you have your work cut out for you.
Yes, and it's what's happening in India is that in the name of women's empowerment, they are basically discriminating against men and actually violating their human rights. So what the message I have been trying to promote for the sake of harmony between men and women, especially because I believe that men and women are inseparable and they complement each other, and we have to live together, you know, for the well-being of the family and the society. The message I'm promoting within India is that you cannot do injustice to men and call it as doing justice to women.
No.
You cannot oppress men and then call it as uplifting of women. You cannot harm men and call it as protecting women. And, you know, so many other things, you know, you can't degrade men and call it as honoring women. You cannot undermine men's lives and then call it as valuing women's lives. You can't neglect men's welfare and call it as promoting women's welfare. So, and you know, especially you cannot violate men's rights and call it as upholding women's rights. Men and women both are human, and unless they are given their rightful place in the family and the society, we cannot actually hope for any, you know, sort of stability in the society. So that's the reason why, you know, in a very healthy way, we would like to promote the message that it is actually, you know, we should celebrate the men in our lives. There's a lot of stereotyping that's going on, and based on that, they are always making laws, policies, and any sort of, you know, upliftment measures for women. And it's not right, because it's hurting both men, women, and also children, most importantly. And this is causing a lot of families to break up. And, you know, India, which is looked up to as, you know, in fact, envied across the world for its great family culture, is right now facing a threat, mostly because of import of Western values, which look at individualism as more important than togetherness and interdependence and cooperative living.
Yes, it's a problem we're hearing about, and it's interesting that you spoke to Warwick Marsh, because we know Warwick very well. He's been on this program a number of times. We'll probably be talking to him in connection with International Men's Day as well. But yes, there seems to be this assumption that by putting men down, that you're therefore putting women up. Whereas I think what we ought to be working for is the equality of treatment of men and women. And and International Men's Day, I guess, is that is one of its aims. And do you have any events planned for the day?
Yeah, we actually are planning to do similar events as last year, but hopefully at a much larger scale. Last year we did a number of bike rallies and motor vehicle rallies, and it was really a success, because we were actually able to go to the people. Usually what we do is that we organize an event at a certain place and send out invitations which people may attend or not. So last year we actually went into the went into the crowds, mixed with them, and encouraged them to celebrate the day. And we hope to do the same this year.
And is this across India, or just in where you are? Is it Hyderabad?
No, this is across India. You know, we're doing this all across India, in all major cities, and every year the number is increasing. So last year we celebrated it in Delhi, Bombay, Chennai, Hyderabad, Kerala, Cochin in Kerala, and Nagpur, and a few other cities like Lucknow and Kolkata. But this year we're hoping that it will also go to more remote places.
Well, that's great news. And now you're president of the International, All India Men's Welfare Association, and they have, I understand they've put a number of demands before the government and the society in connection with men's issues.
Yes.
I wonder if you could just perhaps run through a few of those with us. I notice one of them is to abolish all male and gender biased laws and make all laws gender neutral, which seems to be, that's a fairly basic demand, isn't it?
Yes. Actually, there are a bunch of things we need to achieve for the sake of men in India. One is that we need to make specific constitutional amendments so that in almost every place, the term men or women is replaced with the term person.
Yes.
Because now, you know, when we talk about equality, we should actually mean it. And then there are also provisions within the Constitution which actually allow discrimination of men. You know, they sound like they are some sort of positive discrimination towards women, but they are actually for negative discrimination of men. So there are a couple of articles of the Indian Constitution which need to be amended to protect the modesty of men and also to eliminate any sort of discrimination against men. And then there are so many laws. There are about 15 laws in India which specifically discriminate against men and violate their basic human rights. So, and they're not just related to family. They also include, you know, issues like, as simple as, you know, relationship cheating is treated as rape in this country. Mm. You know, when men and women are moving along together and entering relationships, they should be allowed to do so you know, freely and also leave relationships freely. But as simple as, things as simple as dating and, you know, being in regular relationships, even just simple heterosexual relationships which are not, you know, even, you know, emotional, romantic, they're not even romantic relationships, they're converted into legal issues. So those kind of things we would like to address. And they also, you know, social welfare measures are as important for men as they are for women. You know, men do some of the most difficult jobs and some of the most dangerous jobs, but somehow their welfare is not given any importance in the country. So many social welfare measures are necessary. You know, be it education, financial health, you know, emotional issues, and, you know, including, you know, actually specifically allotting some funds, especially because men contribute to 82% of the tax revenue of the country. So we also have very important issues like addictions. You know, the country treats men as some sort of servants who are, you know, liable to do a lot of services to the country. But, and you know, we also, at the slightest provocation or slightest opportunity, we would like to jail our men. But even if you take issues like domestic violence, the maximum amount of domestic violence in this country takes place because of addictions, which, you know, which could be alcoholism or nicotine addiction or, you know, drug abuse or something like that. There's also a lot of psychological problems which lead to psychological problems and neglect which lead to domestic violence. And instead of addressing these issues in a proactive manner, we are going ahead and bringing about laws pretty much for any act of a man and calling it a crime and asking for imprisonment of men, which is very bad. So we would like to you know, enable people to understand the issues for what they are and address the reasons and the root causes of the problems rather than make every act of a man as a crime and then calling for imprisonment as a solution, because that's very detrimental to the individuals, the families, and you know, the society as a whole.
Yes, imprisonment seems to be the first resort of a lot of governments. But is there any discrimination or anti-discrimination law in India?
There is no, I mean, there are a lot of things which talk about stopping discrimination against the disabled, women and girls, poor people, migrants, minorities, and pretty much everyone, but you actually miss seeing the word men in the list of vulnerable groups.
So that's discriminatory for a start, isn't it?
Yes.
And yes, I understand there's no protection against sexual harassment in the workplace or against rape and seduction
Not
for men?
Not at all. There is no protection of any sort within the family or outside the family. There are a bunch of general laws in the Indian Penal Code, you know, but there are special laws that are made for women for pretty much anything that women consider as harassment or abuse. And the other problem is that somehow it is thought that men, forget about sexual exploitation. I don't think men, the people realize that men actually go through any sort of abuse. But our surveys have shown that if you go by the definition of violence against men, pretty much 90% of, at least 90% of Indian men face the same forms of abuse that women do, in the hands of the opposite sex. And when you come to sexual exploitation, I think what people think is that it is just the men, men actually seek abuse, you know, because arousal is discernible, and as a result, they face this constant allegations that they are obsessed with sex, which is very sad. That men think that, a lot of people think that men indulge in sex voluntarily, but women take part in sex only to fulfill the sexual and emotional needs of men, which is absolutely wrong. I think that sexual exploitation happens even against men, and especially young men and boys, and amongst older men, you also see a lot of exploitation within and outside marriage. They are either coerced or enticed to have sex with women. They are blackmailed into having sex with women within and outside marriage. And they also face allegations of rape, even when the sexual relationship is consensual. Many men in India are forced into marriage because women enter consensual sexual relationships and use it as a tool of blackmail to force men into marriages, because the society has a lot of sympathy for women, and they value women's sexuality as very highly. That's very sad. And another form of sexual abuse is actually wives withholding sex as a means to blackmail and take revenge. So women keep women, their men, as captives. You know, they withhold sex, and at the same time, they don't let go of them, you know, either by divorcing them or allowing them to live separately. So all these are different forms of sexual abuse which are not recognized. Forget about even making any provisions for protecting men from all these forms, men and boys, from these kinds of abuse.
Now, Yuma, these are getting into quite emotional areas. I was just wondering, for you personally, it's quite unusual perhaps for a woman in India to be supporting men's rights. Have you faced any difficulties in promoting these causes?
When promoting the cause, you mean?
Well, promoting, yes, men's rights causes generally. Have you?
Yes.
Have people...
Most women's rights activists have called me anti-women for trying to be balanced and seeing men as an integral part of our lives. So, and I have even received threats from some radical groups saying that they would cause me damage if I didn't close my organizations and stop the activities. But I continue to do it because I realize that a lot of people understand what I'm saying. It is just that they are either not sure if it is politically correct to say the same things loudly, and some of them are actually afraid that, you know, they might be harmed or called they would be probably ridiculed, because this is not a very common thing, you know. That the thing is, women are not expected to understand men's problems. A lot of women are expected to be just the way, you know, because most women who come out and speak are actually radical women. And they seem to be speaking for all women. But most women who live within families love the men in their lives, no matter how they are. I mean, we don't expect our men to be perfect. But in spite of, because neither are we. I mean, women are not perfect either, but we expect to be loved and cared for. And the same is the case with men. I mean, we all condemn extreme behaviors of any sort that men indulge in. But most men, average men, are nothing different in terms of desiring and deserving the same love, affection and care that women expect. So this is the common sentiment of all the women that I come across. It is just that they're either too busy doing other things and unable to notice what's going on around them until it actually affects the men in their lives. So now my goal is to actually involve, in fact, men also in the country have been somewhat brainwashed to believe that they are responsible for every bad thing that happens to women, even if it's a small percentage of women that are going through exploitation or abuse. And they're also told that maybe some 500 years ago, men as a group have started discriminating against women, and therefore the price to pay is to actually undergo abuse now. So they also allow abuse. So I'm trying to put some positive messages into their heads, you know, both into men and women, that we are human first.
Yes.
And you have to look at people around you. I mean, when you look at feminists doling out statistics, they tell you that 1 in 3 women are in India are burned to death. I asked them the simple question, how many women have you seen burned to death? How many women have you met in your life, and how many women have you seen burned to death? Your simple questions, how many? Mm. 1 in 3 would mean that you would have seen a lot more women who have been abused. But the fact is that we are all, men and women, in their own ways, both within the house and outside, are making our own compromises and trade-offs.
Yes.
To have a harmonious coexistence, which is, you know, which is what the feminists are portraying as abuse of women. You know, they say that, you know, the freest form of life is making no compromises. But I don't think either men or women can have it all. You know, just human life is such that we all have to make compromises. And you know, abuse is more serious. You know, using the term abuse for everything is really sad, because that actually is a way to that actually trivializes real abuse. Now, even if you take rape or domestic violence, they are serious words, and using those words for everything is actually trivializing the real abuse.
Yes,
so that's what the women's organizations have been doing, and because of which the real victims actually suffer.
Yes, and you've demonstrated the overall approach by the fact you've also founded the All India Forgotten Women's Association and the Mothers-in-Law Protection Association. So you are demonstrating the treating all people in the same way in your own activism.
Yes, the All India Forgotten Women's Association was actually formed because I wanted an alternative voice for women. I did not want these just, the so-called women's organizations who actually are anti-men and anti-family to be speaking for all women.
Yes. You
know, they don't speak for all women. I would like the rest of the women represented. And also, there's a lot of discrimination against women also in this country just because they're related to men.
Mm.
You know, like if you belong to the husband's family, then you're all bad. So even among women, there is no equality. It is in a marriage, it is the wife who's treated, is only the wife who's treated as the woman. Mm-hmm. Woman. And in other relationships, it is the wife, girlfriend, concubine, just the partner of the man is considered as the woman, but not the rest of the family members in the man's family. So that's another aspect that we wanted to highlight. Most of these laws are actually not treating even all women equally.
Mm.
So, and it's very clear, most of these laws have been brought about to create disharmony between men and women, not really to solve the real problem.
Yes.
Yes. Because if you wanted to solve the problem, you would be proactive. I tell you a simple example. I was basically trying to create awareness about domestic violence last year, the entire month of October, and I was distributing flyers about what domestic violence really means. And I met this young man who came up to me and said, Madam, you're doing this, would you do something for my sister? I asked him what his sister's problem was. And he said, my brother-in-law is beating her up every day. And I said, do you know why? He said, he drinks every day and he comes and beats her up. I asked him what he does for a living. He said, he's a construction laborer. And I said, how is he like when he's not drunk? He said, he's absolutely fine. And I said, what would you like to do? He said, I would like to report to the police and get him arrested. And I said, okay, let's just think about it this way. Let's say that you had a brother who had a drinking problem and he came and beat you guys up. And would you have him arrested? He said, no. I said, what would you do? He said, I'd take him to a doctor and get him treated. I said, okay, so when it was your brother, you treated him as family. And you said that he needed to be treated for his problem. But when it's a brother-in-law, you are not treating him as a family member. So you want to get him arrested. So that's when he understood that, you know, this is a much bigger problem.
Yes, and we can relate to that. Umar, unfortunately, we're running out of time. But look, it's been great to talk to you and to get that perspective from India. And we can only wish you all the best with your activism and your campaign for men's rights. So once again, Umar Shalah, thank you very much for coming on the program, and we hope you have a very successful International Men's Day.
Thank you, and I wish you the same.
Thanks, Umar. And that's about it for this week on Dad's on the Air. We'll be back next week with another big show, and we look forward to seeing you then. In the meantime, if you want to hear this week's show again, you can go to www.dadsontheair.net. www.dadsontheair.net. And if you stay tuned now on 2GLF, we've got Country On with Country Bob. So until next week, from Dads on the Air, it's Bill Cable and Phil York saying cheerio.
Have a good week.
Yeah, cheerio. Have a good week, and we'll see you then.
We ask for